Well, today we're going to start on the actual gifts of the Spirit, 1 Corinthians 12. We have, I hope, established forever in your minds that the gifts of the Spirit have nothing to do with flesh. And each one of the gifts, as we study the gifts individually, will emphasize that. But the predicate from God's perspective of the gifts of the Spirit, he tried it once and it failed. Remember, he blew on the... After he was resurrected before Pentecost, during the counting of the Omer, he breathed on the disciples and said, "Receive ye the Holy Spirit." And it just about cost him 2/3 of the disciples. And so from God's perspective, the Holy Spirit and the gifts of the Holy Spirit, it's up to his disciples to administer the gifts with integrity and with stewardship. And it's up to hopefully the discerning to know the difference between the gifts being applied to the flesh and how that will be misused. All you have to do is look. Does everybody understand this now?
Yeah, it's like, it seems that the flesh does benefit by the gifts, but it's not for the flesh. So it's like part of the discernment has to be that, okay, so you might gain something in the flesh, and still not, that's not the point.
Yeah, the point is, if you apply the holy oil or the Holy Spirit to the flesh, it's a death penalty.
But that, you have to know that. Otherwise, you'll take it and run with it, thinking it's carnal rice.
All right. Let's start in verse 7 of 1 Corinthians 12. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit with all. It doesn't mean it's given to every man for the individual to profit. It's for the benefit of the body. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit with all. For to one is given by the Spirit of... I think I had an allergic reaction to Michael.
Michael walked in and...
You got a fight. They got a spasm. The mayor started to sweat.
Hi, Michael.
Probably not nervous.
Yeah, I got nervous when you came in. It really makes me nervous when different people come in and I have to teach in front of them.
There's Germans in the driveway.
Yeah, you got to be careful for the Germans in the driveway. They've really missed you, by the way.
They're walking up to everybody going, "Sprechen Sie Deutsch?"
For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another diverse kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. But all these worketh that one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing to every man severally as he will. Now the first one is the Spirit of wisdom. In the Old Testament, the primary use for the word wisdom, or wisdom given, was in the building of the Ark of the Covenant, or in building of the temple. How that the word wisdom, it's in Greek, it's the word, it's the wisdom of the world and the wisdom of God. It's the same word, Sophia. But the false use of wisdom is sophistry, which is interesting, another word. In the Old Testament, it's chokmah. But the primary use of wisdom, as I said, in the Old Testament is with regard to the building of the temple and the building of the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle in the wilderness. And you can go there and see that talks over and over how God gave wisdom to the craftsmen so that they would build everything according to the pattern that Moses saw, because everything that Moses saw was Christ. And he slowly built the pattern through all of these talented people.
Maybe think how wise it is to build the house of God, to build the Ark of God.
Right. It is the definition, because, again, it's constructing the model so that when that which is perfect is come, they will have something to compare it with, to see if it's the perfection. Everybody understand that? So let's look at something about wisdom. First of all, the word wisdom is the art of reaching one's end by the use of the right means. So you can use that word for both, for anything. You can use the wisdom of the world to reach the end of your objective in the world system, or you can use the wisdom of God to reach the objective of God. You know that the bottom line for the wisdom being transformed from the wisdom of God to the wisdom of, I mean, from the wisdom of man to the wisdom of God is the cross. Now, the word of wisdom is used several places. Oh, let's see, where should we start? Let's go to Luke 14. This is a perfect example of God's wisdom. In chapter 14, verse 7, and he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee and him come on, say unto thee, give this man place. And thou begin with shame to take the lower room. But when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then thou shalt have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. For whoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. So the first look at the wisdom of the world versus the wisdom of man is the wisdom of man always tends to be concerned with your self-realization. This move is good for you, it's good for your career, it's good for your something. The wisdom of God says, no, always do the opposite. Always take the lowest seat. And the lowest seat is in every possible circumstance. This is the manifestation of the wisdom. And this is repeated in Proverbs 25, if you're taking notes. Proverbs 25, verse 6 and 7. And also go to Luke 6. Go backwards. But I say unto you, which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you. It's another perfect example of the wisdom of God, of man versus the wisdom of God. What happens if you have an enemy? By the very nature of things, you avoid that person. You because it's unpleasant. But he says, love your enemies. Love meaning a verb. It means you give your enemy's life more important than you do your own. That's, remember, you give, if you, to love your enemies by definition means that you must give them more importance in your life than you do yourself. That's a big, this isn't something that you can take out in the world and say how the world should act. This isn't to the world. The world can't love their enemies. You'd have disaster in every corner. But for us, you must love your enemies. You must do good to them that hate you. Does everybody see that? Another example of the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of man. Bless them that curse you. I can't do that. They don't treat me right. Unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. Oh, I can't do that.
Hold him up now.
Do you understand? This is all part of the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is the wisdom of God. And nothing about the Sermon on the Mount has anything to do with the world. It can't be done. Except by his disciples. This is the way you know whether you're a disciple or not. What's the bottom line here? If you look at all of the Beatitudes and all of the Sermon on the Mount, you'll find one common denominator, and that is that you have no rights. The reason the Levites were invented. The Levites were invented to live a life where they had no rights. They had no inheritance in the land. Unfortunately, the Levites here... Never mind. You're a bondservant to all.
Predicate of this whole last month or so isn't perceived, or then none of this will make any sense. But this place of emptiness, having abandoned, given all, allows you to hear this.
Give to every man that asketh of thee, not lend, give. And of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. In other words, don't expect it to be returned. If somebody takes something from you, and this isn't just for Levites, this is for everyone that names the name of Christ. As you would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if you love them which love you, and thank, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you good do good to them which do good to you, what thank have you? For sinners also do even the same. And if you lend to them of whom you hope to receive, what thank have you? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive much again. But love your enemies, and do good, and lend, give, hope, lend hoping for nothing again. In other words, to lend something to someone, hoping for nothing to be gained. In other words, you're giving it. And your reward shall be great, and you shall be the children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Therefore, be you therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and you shall not be condemned. Judged, condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Now, this is not just talking about money. This is the famous Luke 6:38. Everybody, every prosperity preacher in the universe knows this one by heart. But it's not just talking about money. It's talking about you. Give of yourself. Give friendship. Give. 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 Because, remember, I think everybody I've ever talked to at one time in their life had this idea of the cornucopia that was never empty. And could be, you know, over with me it was a jar of peanut butter when I was a little kid. Everybody has had that experience. Something about that you've possessed or had in your frame of reference, you've imagined it being never ending. And this is where this concept of zero comes in from a spiritual standpoint. For us, there is no zero. There is no none. There is no lack. There is no such thing as zero. There is no such thing as nothing. And therefore, in every possible situation that you're in, you're generous with praise. You're generous with everything. You're generous with your very being. It's not the wisdom of the world. The wisdom of the world is you have to protect yourself. I was just tempted hugely just recently. And I was tempted by a federal agent. There's a law that says if you, something, information that you give to a federal, to the federal government results in them collecting monies due to them, then you get a percentage of it when they collect it. We were in a situation, and we've been responsible for hundreds of thousands of dollars being collected by the government in the past. And so this a U.S. attorney and an agent came, and they said, only this time you should fill out the Form 211, where you'll get 10 to 15% of anything that's collected, you or the foundation. And I was really tempted to do it. The first blush of it was one of those weeks when we couldn't make payroll. I was tempted also the first time I went undercover with Tilton's back in 91 we went undercover into an organization called Response Media, and I went in as myself, and we had been talking to Fox Network about having a television show, hosting a television show. And we had prepared them a proposal, and I took that proposal up, and I went in as myself and said, we expect a lot of mail to be generated. We want you to handle the mail. Of course, it was hidden camera. We have that done if anybody's interested in seeing it. And they started talking about the hundreds of millions of dollars we could make, a book a month. And I was just very, very tempted to tell the ABC News, the cameraman, the hidden camera people, to turn the camera off and go home.
God has answered our prayers.
But this particular, the latest one, would have meant something on the order, probably in the neighborhood, up somewhere between $300,000 and $1 million that would have come back to us. I couldn't do it. I was tempted to do it. I talked to a couple people about it. They agreed it shouldn't be done. But it's still, you're never going to stop being tempted. You're never going to stop being tempted to benefit yourself.
This is where the evangelist, it's that fork in the road, because they pray and an opportunity like this comes, and they say, well, God brought this to me. I guess I'm supposed to take this path. start selling out.
Well, it's for us. It's not always in these big things like that. It's in the little things. It's in the daily little things where you're insisting on your rights. You got to hear me. Because the wisdom of God always lays down your life. The wisdom of man insists on your rights. So this is the beginning of the study of wisdom. Wisdom was given. Solomon prayed. God said, go to 1 Kings 4, I think.
I'm confused about the difference between filling out that form and preparing a proposal for the Starks.
Well, let's put it, because they came to us, and it was something that they wanted to do. And part of the agreement that we made with them was they decided they were going to give us a whole lot of money. And we decided that we couldn't take a whole lot of money because there was a possibility that because of the Oklahoma project, we're going to have to have bankruptcy. And we didn't want to. So we created a situation, a deal, in which they still, gave in their minds us a whole lot of money for the door, but once a year we have to account for and project what's going to happen.
Well, the money that you're talking about we would have gotten from a benefit from an investigation.
Right.
Suddenly Trinity Foundation's getting a benefit from investigating somebody from getting, that money. That's kind of weird.
No, we don't want
to. So, it's a little different.
The
different
proposal
deal.
For the Starks is, in actuality, it's meeting their need.
Well, the government has money to give us money.
No, and this is the reason, it's a very good question, because for 30 some years, many, many times, people that wanted us to have an endowment program so that we would have funds that would be there so that we could be able to meet need as it came up, and we could be able to. And I took the position for all those years that no, I wanted us always to be at risk. And so we never had a formal fundraising program. We, asked different people for money periodically when we were really in need, but we never had a formal fundraising program. And so during this time that I was essentially bedridden, giving went way down. And I don't know what happened, but from my personal standpoint, after 32 years, when I was sick, it just became clear to me that we should have an endowment program. That it was what we did was fine for all that time, but now my main concern was what would happen to the work of the foundation if something happened to me, if I was killed. So the board made a decision which to investigate it. Now the board's going to have to make a decision to approve it. It's not, there isn't a simple answer. There isn't but in general terms, I can promise you the wisdom of God is opposite from the wisdom of man. Now, in this particular case, for those of you that have been here a long time, you know that I've turned down millions of dollars. And it's because I was stupid. But this isn't rules of how to live. This is a sense that the things about the gifts of the Spirit are always not given for the purposes of benefiting the flesh. So, what this means is you've probably been given enough wiggle room to justify anything. And so that's between you and the Holy Spirit.
The commandment or injunction or whatever it is about examine your own self, know you not that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobate, has caused me a lot of concern, especially over the last year or two. And I am asking and have been asking God for some evidence of Christ in me. And the fact that, like this morning, that I could stay in the room and listen to what you've said and hear what you're saying, to me, is an answer to that prayer. To me, that's an evidence of Christ in me. Because the things you've said this morning are so
opposite,
hateful to the way this thing was raised. You just can't hear these things.
Well, you guys can read it. We're out of time again. But read 1 Kings 4, or 1 Kings 3 and 3 and 4. And it talks about that how when God essentially said to Solomon, you can have anything you want. And what Solomon prayed for was wisdom. And that wisdom is huge. And you can see it manifested. It's the wisdom of Christ with regard to in the manifestation of Solomon. You can see Christ in his glory in Solomon. Just like you see Christ in his humiliation in Job. But the whole mystery of your walk with God on a second-by-second daily basis is dependent on the gift of wisdom. Because I promise you that relying on the things that you've relied on in the past, the things that you have had confidence in the past, that's mammon. And so it's the whole mystery of God is the denial of mammon, or the things that you've had confidence in the past, and trusting and relying only on the moment by moment, second by second, nanosecond by nanosecond, Spirit of the living God. And these sort of outlines of the gifts are so that you can check. It's a check. It's a exhortation to you to not be deceived into thinking the wisdom of man at any particular point is the gift of the Holy Spirit's wisdom.
Yeah, the word of wisdom will always reflect these things we're talking about.
Right.
It's all one thing.
And there's a whole bunch more about the word of wisdom, but we're out of time.